Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And the first two tomatoes that began to turn, the first two in the middle of the largest tomato plant, the squirrels, when I checked yesterday at noon, they were fine. When I checked yesterday at 5, squirrels had gotten to them. Squirrels had dug holes in them. Squirrels had eaten them. Now, I can save about half the tomato. Michael, come look at these. Can you see them?
I can.
They've been infested by squirrel paws. I hate squirrels.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Two more over the weekend. I had to pull two more. As they begin, I know, Nigel, you said something about they can distinguish green and red. But as they begin to turn, as the plants begin to turn, they turn from green to yellow to a sort of an orange and then to a red. We'll never get to red in this house because the squirrels go out there. Now, we do have some email, and we'll talk about that later, on how to stop the squirrel infestation.
It has to be about smell.
I guess. You don't think it's sight. You don't think it's visual.
I just think they can smell the tomatoes maturing.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'd like to shoot them, but...
What's so great is as you listen to that open, you are nodding in agreement with yourself.
Yeah, well, I am because we have this problem. Now, again, you can cut away. You can save at least half the tomato. And I had a couple of those tomatoes.
May I explain my morning?
Sure.
So we go out. We tend to the garden. You harvest the fallen, I would say.
Peppers.
Yeah.
Three quarters of each pepper
destroyed
dead.
Peppers that
and
are
I cut
rotten.
It away. Yes,
they're rotten tomatoes essentially.
Yes,
or peppers. They're...
But I cut them away. I cut the good parts away.
Yeah, so you showed me how you cut them, take away all the bad parts, and then put them in a clean bag.
Clean
and by
bag.
Clean, we mean a lightly used Ziploc plastic bag.
Lightly used with not like the Bethesda bagels, not
seasoning.
The ones with onions.
Yeah,
like the plain ones are in a separate bag. So yeah, they're lightly used. Yes, that's true. Let me get to. We also spread cayenne pepper. In and around the tomatoes, not the peppers. The peppers are dying of natural fungus of some sort, but the tomatoes, cayenne pepper, that's one of the solutions. Not
we
as
salt
good.
It first.
Hmm?
We salt it first.
Yes. 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 Okay.
Brine it.
Yeah, you missed that, Dad. It's okay.
I'm not involved in the cooking with the cayenne peppers. I'm just involved in the trying to kill the squirrel appetite for my tomatoes. Let me tell you a story about what happened. First of all, let me just mention this. I don't know how much we're going to talk about the Nats. We may talk a little bit about the Nats. But Anthony Fauci, no. That was the worst. A right-hander. That was Carl Lewis. That was a right-hander throwing it 12 feet dead left on an angle.
He tried to fast pitch it, too.
It was just terrible. And let me just say this, because I have great respect for Anthony Fauci in all areas of his life. I have friends who trained under him. Who know him. My friend Jody knows him and loves him. Jody Forstadt. I have done this. Now, I grant you, it's 20 to 25 years ago. I have thrown out a first pitch. You need to practice. You need to go to the bullpen. You need to go to an underground spot. You need to throw till your arm hurts. You need to do this because you need the repetitive motion of throwing. You don't throw anymore. It's been years since you've thrown, and the pressure that is on you to make a good pitch.
I'm talking about practice.
Is going to make it worse. So you throw literally for 15 to 20 minutes on the side before you throw out a first pitch, and then you'll get it to the plate. You will. You'll get it to the plate.
Where do you think he's going to find 15 to 20 minutes in his day?
He was just at the ballpark. He could have done it there. He could have warmed up with Kenny Rosenthal. He could have warmed up with somebody.
Well,
he got to do that.
He was getting advice from Zim.
Well, advice on the Zoom boom doesn't do anything. It's useless.
You don't want Zim to tell you how to throw from third to first. But
yeah, because he couldn't make that throw, which is why he's on first. But Fauci's throw was dreadful. It was dreadful. Still love him, but it was a dreadful throw.
But imagine getting to throw out the first pitch for your two teams. You grew up a Yankees fan, and now you love the Nats.
So that was good. All right, let me get to a story, a consequential story. Yesterday at about, I don't know, 12, 1 o'clock, our air conditioning goes out. I go through the house, I start putting on fans. Everywhere we have a fan, I put on the fan. Carol calls Crop Metcalf, with whom we have a service contract. And we're told it could be anywhere between 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock that they would come out. And now it's 1 o'clock, and it's 95 degrees, and it's going up to 97. Then about 30 or 40 minutes later, power goes out in various spots in our house. Power goes out on the second floor where the bedrooms are.
The entire floor? By various, are you talking about certain outlets, certain rooms?
All of the fans that were on in three different rooms, in Michael's bedroom, in the computer room, and in our bedroom, all of the fans went out. Okay, the lights went out, the clocks went out. The upstairs in the attic where we do the PTI show, the attic fan was still on. The refrigerator was still on. It was not a full blackout. So then we decide, we get some advice from James, and we call an electrician. I think it's Hawkins electrician. We go into the Nancy Bubis book of who to call in an emergency when you're trying to sell a $50 million house, and that electricity company is there. They come within about an hour to an hour and a half. Philip shows up. About 10 minutes before Philip shows up, actually when Philip shows up, he says, you know, there's a Pepco truck in the street. Now, we had called Pepco. We had called Pepco to find out if there was an outage in our area. And we were told there's no particular outage in the area. So Philip says there's a Pepco truck in the street. And at that time, and I said to Philip, I said, I'm sure this happens to you all the time. About 10 minutes before you showed up, the power seemed to come back on. Like magic. We don't really understand what happened. The power seemed to come back on. And that's when he said to me, well, there's a Pepco truck in the street. Maybe they did it. And I said, well, what would be the point of that? Because there was no power outages. The Pepco guy is walking in front of his truck, and I walk over to him and I say, well, what happened here? And the explanation is far too technical for me. I don't understand it. It had to do with a hot something or other. I don't know what happened. But he went up on the box, which is on top of the telephone pole. It's 20 feet off the ground. You got to use the cherry picker to get up there.
Bootsy would have loved this.
Right. He goes up on that. He does something, some ring-dang-do, whatever he does. I don't know what he does. And then all the power comes back on. He said, you didn't have a problem. He said, we cut your power by half. That's what we did. In order to fix this, we cut your power by half. And I said, well, I called an electrician. He said, well, you don't need him. I said, he's in the house. I said, I called the AC guy. I said, you don't need him. I said, they're on their way to the house. And he said, well, you don't need him. I said, well, how was I to know that? How could I know that it was this when we called Pepco? Pepco reported no problem in the area. Now, you're here a couple of hours later. You fix it. I'm very grateful. Thank you very, very much.
Could it have been heat related?
I don't know. It could have been, but I don't know. But if it's heat related, it's coming back today and tomorrow and the next day. Do you know what an electrician charges you on a Sunday for the first 15 minutes of his work?
First 15, so you didn't even get like the full hour.
First 15 minutes of his work.
$250?
$240. Not $2.40, $204. Now, let me tell you this. I would do this again 1,000 times.
Absolutely.
The guy came to my house on a Sunday. He came willing to fix whatever problem he saw. I would do this 1,000 times in a row. This is what rainy day money is. This is what you have it for. Now, I'm not saying everybody has it. I am fortunate, as I always say. I have it, and I wrote the check, and I wrote the check without any anger. You know, I mean, 30 minutes earlier, you know, I don't have to do it, but okay. But okay. But what Pepco, by the way, for those of you out of town, stands for Potomac Electric Power Company. That's just the acronym for the electricity company in Washington, D.C. Did I do anything wrong?
No, I think I did this really well. And this is the tough question when you talk about rainy day money and the cost of home ownership is if you have any service person coming out, whether it's electrical, plumbing, you're working on HVAC, it's the driving to you fee where you have to start wondering, like, do I have anything else? So we had an HVAC issue, and you start to say,
I wanted him to plug in the old refrigerator.
When you're here, do the cleaning I don't want to have to pay that the fee to get you.
And the air conditioner people came after that.
I would have liked him to look at that fridge downstairs to see if the outlets could support it.
He looked at it. He said he had something in his truck. He came back. He said, I don't have it. I said, could you plug it in? He said, it'll smell for a while, but then it'll get better. But he didn't even plug it in.
What kind of smell are we talking about?
I don't know. Like dead muskrats or something. I don't know. But in any case, that's tangential. This was my power story. And I am grateful that the people came. I'm happy to pay the money. I'm more grateful that Pepco fixed it. But you're in that position where you go, oh, whoa, I had no idea. Right?
Well,
I mean, how am I supposed to know?
You're at an age where we can't have you without air conditioning.
I would molt. Like
you couldn't last.
I could die.
Night. And you guys keep this house hot. The house hot. Yeah. Like you normally keep it at about 76, 77 in the summer.
Yeah.
Now, I knew something was up because we're finishing lunch with the boys, and I start getting text messages from Mom, and I start getting these angsty, very emotional voicemails from you. And I just kept listening, and it's visual voicemail first because it transcribes, and I just keep waiting it to be like, we'll be at your house at 5. If this isn't resolved, we're sleeping with you tonight.
I want you to know that that was,
you had
that,
bags
was
packed?
That was an option that I was going to impose upon you. Absolutely. I was going to sleep downstairs. Yeah, absolutely.
The basement's always ready for you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do if need be. But as I say, it was resolved well, so I'm happy. So we will take a break. What is it?
I was going to say, I've got bunk beds over here if you haven't have need.
That's after the Michael option. That's not before the Michael option.
A swinging hammock.
So we will... what do I got here? Yeah, so we're gonna flip the order a little bit.
Nice job avoiding Will Smith.
Tim... Huh? No. Well, yeah, I didn't, you know... Will Harris. He stinks. And Sean Doolittle, the Beltway Mitterrand, the vegan intellectual, he stinks.
You're welcome.
He stunk last year. He stinks this year. Can't I, you know, not happy
Corbin,
with the bullpen.
Six and a third.
Best two pitchers, no wins. Corbin and Scherzer, no wins. Corbin got hosed. Bullpen let him down.
Offense,
Tim Kirkchin,
let him down.
When we come back, and I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ad for Perry Mason, and I'm happy to read this ad. Nigel, before I read the ad, Nigel, you're watching, aren't you?
Religiously, yes. I love it. I cannot wait. Sundays at 9 on HBO. It's another fantastic episode last night. It's just brilliant.
HBO's next must-watch series, Perry Mason, stars Emmy winner Matthew Rhys. I'm more fond of his wife, in an origin story for American fiction's most legendary criminal defense lawyer. Catch up on the series The Washington Post calls superb and Vanity Fair lauds as engrossing and unpredictable. Set in 1930s L.A., Mason finds that uncovering the truth means exposing a city full of corruption and everybody is guilty. Co-starring fellow Emmy winners Tatiana Maslany, and she was on Orphan Black, and John Lithgow, who's been around forever and is great. Perry Mason airs on Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO, and you can stream it on HBO Max. And Nigel, it's worth it, right?
Absolutely. I recommend it to everyone.
All right, we have Tim Kirchin. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Dan Carnes, who writes, Satchmo, I've been a massive and longtime supporter of the show in its many iterations for more than 20 years. I even made the pilgrimage to Chatter to listen to the show and put faces to voices. Good omelets, by the way. Would that we were still in business making omelets. Attached is the song Meditate, written and performed by my first child, a masculine child, Miller Carnes. Miller, like Walker, like Baker, CER names of British occupations. Miller, a senior in high school. Wow. Recorded and produced this in the basement of our home with makeshift and crude equipment. This is called Meditate. And this is lovely, and thank you for this music, original music, which we like, which can be accessed at the end of the show. Original music, not cover tunes, original music at the end of the show. Tim Kirkchin joins us now. I watched Tim last night at Baseball Tonight. I watched a giant screen of Tim's head, and he was on with Ravi and made me very happy, and I was texting back and forth with Ravi during the show. And this makes me so happy when during a television show, I can text with someone. Tim, do you ever do that during a television show, text with people?
Not anymore, because I was never very good at that anyway, but with the problems I'm facing technologically, I have to concentrate on one thing, making sure this camera actually works. And what you don't know is I was supposed to be on the top of the show yesterday, but the technology didn't work, so they couldn't get me on until 6:15. I missed the A's because my camera didn't work. So there I am sitting in this chair, and I can't hear a soul, and they can't hear me. It was really frustrating.
So let me give a little background here. What has happened at ESPN is a lot of people some of whom have had cameras in their house before, or some like me who had never done that, are now working from their houses and cameras are delivered. And sometimes you get very, very lucky. I got very, very lucky in that Tracy Roberts comes to my house every day because she knows if any one thing goes wrong, I will not be able to fix it. Even if it is simply pressing a button, I will not be able to fix it. This is not my skill. I was an English major. I cannot do anything. And so Tracy comes here. Now, Tracy is dear, dear friends with Tim. And Tracy went to Tim's house last week to try to help out because you are not going to go to any games, or you're going to go to some select few games, or what is your schedule?
Well, I'm doing games, and I will go to games, but I will not, I'm sure, broadcast a game from the ballpark. Like most broadcasters were broadcasting remotely from the studio or from home. And I've had a camera in my house, Tony,
for years.
For 20 years. So, I mean, I've had more hits than Ty Cobb in my house. Okay, so I understand how that works. But this is a new camera setup, which allows me to do a major league game from my house.
More so sophisticated.
More sophisticated. All I had to do with Glowpoint was just sit in front of it, and they do the rest. Now I have to hit a million buttons. Tracy was the third person to come over to try to help me with this, and that poor girl sat next to me from 10 o'clock at night until 1:15 in the morning just to make sure nothing went wrong. And at one point, the camera went black completely, and I wasn't quite sure what to do, so Tracy took care of that. But I'm better than you, Tony, but I stink at this stuff, and I get worried about this stuff. And we thought we had it fixed yesterday, and from 6 to 6:15, it wasn't fixed last evening, and that was a bit discouraging. And I have another game tonight now, the Mets at the Red Sox, and I just have to pray that I don't foul anything up along the way.
So let me just get a couple of things out of the way. In watching the Nats on
Thursday.
No, on Saturday, Fox did the game, and Kenny was there. Kenny was actually in the ballpark. You're not going to do that?
Well,
Kenny
I'm
Rosenthal,
in the booth.
I refer to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm in the booth. I'm not on the field. And I think it's a slightly different story.
Okay.
When you're on for 4 hours at a time, you need to be jumping in all the time, and the best way to do that is from your house. Like Buster Olney was there on opening night, sitting in the stands doing reports, but he only gave a report here and there. I'm supposed to be on every pitch, and the only way to do that is to be hooked in with a camera from home.
So when Tracy came back to my house after going to your house, Tracy said, "You won't believe what they've done to Tim's house." What have they done? They've drilled holes in your ceiling, apparently. What have they done to your house?
Well, I have a studio in my house. I've got lights coming from the ceiling, pink champagne on ice. You know, I've got a black cabinet in here for my Glowpoint, and then they had to come in and fix my background. So when you see me on camera, you can see everything behind me. Now, what I have behind me was fine before, but we had to do some really creative work behind me. I did the creative work. My wife, the world's most creative woman in the world, came in, looked at it, shook her head, and said, "This is sad." So she went and moved some stuff around. Now it looks great. Even Tracy told me that. So I have a great background now to go with. As I look in the camera, you can look behind me, and there's some interesting stuff back there.
Would you like to have giant posters of books I have written to put behind you in the way that I have done that for me?
No, I would like to have two really smart people standing behind me at all times, just in case something goes wrong. That's what I need in my office. But I can't do that because there aren't enough people to work. So I must say, as terrible as I am, I have figured out some of the problems with the system, and I've been able to fix them on my own. It's a miracle, given how technologically challenged I am.
This is an incredible mistake, Tim. Once they find out you can do something, they'll never send a tech to your house ever again. They'll just assume that you are an electronic whiz. What I worry about is you're going to go to somebody like Norby Williamson and say, I'm more important than Tony. Tracy has to come here. She cannot go to his house anymore. Do I have to worry about that?
No, but seriously, here's what I'm worried about. We do such a great job eventually doing these games from home that somebody's going to say, hey, just stay at home. We just saved $1 zillion not sending the crew on the road. We could do it like this forever. Then I will be very upset because as corny as it sounds, there is no substitute for me for being at the ballpark. And to do a game from 3,000 miles away, as I did on Thursday night, that is a challenging situation, especially when your broadcast play-by-play guy is 400 miles away and the other color guy is 500 miles away. That makes it really hard.
It doesn't work. There's no – look, we noticed this with PTI. It's a relationship show. A booth is a relationship situation. It's fine. People are grateful. It doesn't work as well as it should. I found out official scorers aren't going to games. You can't. That's terrible, Tim. An official scorer shouldn't have to depend on a solitary feed by a home team. It's not fair. It's not fair.
Right. The hitting coach for the Mets is the hitting coach for the Mets remotely. He is watching games, watching video. Yes. That's how we're doing things now, Tony. And not everyone is with their team. And that's what we're up against right now is how are we going to make all of this work? And it's really, really tricky stuff.
So I was very excited, of course, to watch Thursday night, to watch Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer. I had predicted to a few of my friends it would be 4-1 Yankees at the end of two. I was close on that particular score because I knew Scherzer would give up a home run. But I honestly thought when we found out we're getting ready to do PTI, it's probably in a 3 o'clock hour, we find out about Soto and the positive test. I thought they'd postpone the game. When I heard Aaron Boone say, we came here to play and we're ready to play, I knew they would not. But I thought they would at first. Did you?
I did not think they would postpone the game, Tony, because I think by starting when they did, in the middle of a pandemic, they had to acknowledge all sorts of things are going to happen here, and we're either going to play through it or we're not going to play at all. And that's what they've decided to do. Now, maybe it'll get so bad from here that they'll throw up their hands, MLB, and say, we can't do this. This is irresponsible. This is unhealthy. But four Miami Marlins tested positive yesterday.
Yes.
The team did not leave after the game. They stayed overnight and are going back from Philadelphia
to
today
Baltimore
for their home opener.
They're in Miami. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so they have to figure out what they're going to do now. This is obviously a very dangerous situation, and if something like this starts happening all over the place, then we're going to have to rethink where we are in baseball. But, Tony, you know this. With all the money there is to be made in the playoffs in October and more playoff games than ever coming up in October, baseball is going to do everything it can to finish this season. And if it gets dangerous, they're going to have to stop it. But I think they're going to say, look, there are going to be positive tests, and we're going to work our way through it.
Well, you have to have roster flexibility, obviously, because you could lose, you know, if the Miami Marlins lost four, you could lose 10, you could lose 12. I mean, you could. You're exposed to people in the dugout, in the clubhouse. I mean, it could go right through. What surprised me, Tim, the most, I think, was when I read, and I don't know how this works, but it took more than 24 hours to get a result on a test. That surprised me. Were you aware of that? I guess I thought it would be instantaneous.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I think that's part of the problem is we don't have immediate understanding of what's going on here, and that's the problem. Tony, I talked to one of the Mets the other day about what it's like. He said he gets tested, his temperature taken twice before he gets out of his car in the morning at the ballpark. Then he goes and stands in line like he's at an amusement park waiting for a ride.
Right.
And waits with everyone else until he gets to the front, and they ask him 100 questions, do some more tests. Then they finally let him in the ballpark. Then, if he leaves to go to lunch, which doesn't happen, and he leaves for an hour, he has to go through the whole process again. And he told me we would get to the ballpark at 6:30 in the morning, and we'd get home at 7:30 at night, because the whole day took so long, because we have to be tested and stay away from people. You can't do a group session with 6 players. You got to stay away from each other, and that's why things are taking so much time.
Do you think that we'll see that reflected by the 30th game or the 25th game, the sort of mental fatigue of this routine that will affect people physically?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is already, after one weekend, starting to wear on these players. Anthony Rizzo just said, you know, of the Cubs, you know, I'm a little nervous going to Cincinnati. Not because it's Cincinnati, it's just their first road trip of the season. They're leaving their little bubble to go somewhere else. And this has been my concern all along, is the travel situation. Where are you going? What kind of hotspot could that potentially be? And what safety protocols are in place when you get there? What's the ballpark, the visiting ballpark, going to look like for you? I mean, these are all the things that now we're getting into. Now that we're through the first weekend and more teams are traveling, it's very complicated.
So people wonder why, when these leagues come out with health and safety protocols, they're probably books 40 and 50 pages long. They probably try to anticipate everything and have a contingency plan, I'm assuming, right?
Right. Well, a manager told me that he tried to get through the safety protocol book that they were all sent, and he said, I couldn't even get through it. It was that big, that complete, and that complicated. That's how, and good for baseball, saying, look, these are the rules. You got to read them. You got to follow them, and yet they're just impenetrable because they're so, so difficult to get through.
Get you out of here on this. If you had to bet, would you bet that there would be at least one full stoppage of the baseball season?
I would say yes, Tony, but to me, if there's a full stoppage, that ends the season. You can't do this in baseball. To me, you can't tell everyone we're going to take 9 days off, because now you got to have a ramp up again. This is not the NBA. You can take 9 days off and come back and make 8 threes. It doesn't work that way, that Max Scherzer takes 9 days off and comes back and throws like he's been doing the whole time. It doesn't work that way. So I think it makes all the sense they're going to have one stoppage, but to me, one stoppage could mean an entire season.
Thank you, Tim. I'll give Tracy your best this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony.
Tim Kirkjian, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with Michael Wilbon. We went out of order today because Tim has a hit at, you know, relatively speaking, you're going to hear this well after it, but he's got a hit early in the morning. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is an ad for Fitbod. I don't know that I've read this before.
You have.
Have I? I don't remember.
Nigel's using Fitbod.
Okay, whether new to the gym or you've been lifting weights for years, it's hard to find the right workout program and stick to it. If you've ever gone to the gym without a plan, you know how overwhelming the weight room can feel. Even with a trainer, it can be hard to know if you're pushing yourself too much or not enough. But with Fitbod, you get a truly personalized fitness program that adapts as you go. Fitbod's algorithm factors in your goal, experience level, equipment, workout duration, and muscle recovery to intelligently craft the perfect total body workout program just for you. You're using this, Nigel?
I am. Since I can't really go to a gym right now, it's great to have this. It, you know, you set it to design it for what you're looking to do, what your body type is, and it gives you these fantastic personalized workouts every single day. And it's terrific. It's like having a personal trainer on your phone. Great.
Do you send a picture of your body on your phone to someone in the black hole of the universe and they come back with a plan for you? Is that how that works?
No. You just fill in the data, sort of like how tall, how, you know, what your body type is and what you're looking to do.
Fitbod combines the knowledge of fitness pros with a powerful machine learning algorithm to give you a workout program that maximizes your results. You get a program tailored to your unique body experience and environment. Fitbod workouts are balanced to avoid overworking muscles, assuming you have them, with varied exercises to keep you sharp. Fitbod is super easy to use. It even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. So you do that. They show you how to do it, Nigel.
That's right. Yeah, it's a great illustration of what you need to be doing and how to do it. Yeah.
Personalized training can be tough on the budget, but Fitbod is only $9.99 a month, or $59.99 a year. So that's $5 a month. If you sign up for the year, that's $60 divided by 12. Even though I'm not a math major, that's $5
just
a month.
Just checking on that.
Get a personalized fitness plan that helps work you out smarter at fitbod.me/Tony. Try Fitbod for free for 1 month when you sign up today at Fitbod, FITBOD.me/Tony. That's one free month. That's pretty good. When you sign up at fitbod.me/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is an artist we have played before. She goes by the name of River Iris. This is a song called So Tempting. She's good.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She's really good.
This is straight from Spotify Pop Rising.
Yeah, she's really good. You can listen to this music at the end of the podcast in its entirety. Michael, how do people send us their original music?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Michael Wilbon joins us now, and in the break when we were establishing the line and the connection, my son said that he saw the highlights from Wrigley and that the computer-generated fans had been in it on the Cubs game. And Wilbon, you said that on a replay you don't see it.
I didn't see it. I watched the Cubs' first game, which didn't have it.
Right.
That was Kyle Hendricks had pitched a three-hit shutout, and they didn't have it. The next night, I didn't watch much of game two. Watched a little bit of it. Enough to say, oh, they got fans. And then when they showed the replay of like Rizzo rounding the Schwarber rounding the bases, like wait, where'd the fans go? And then when they did the tight shot of somebody rounding first base, there were no fans there. So like, I don't know what the technological capabilities are and aren't, but it was just sort of it was spotty. You know, it was spotty. If you're going to do it at Wrigley Field against the Brewers, then they were showing how they could do it and what they could do and how they could change the colors of their shirts.
Yeah.
And they did a great job, because when you have a game between the Brewers and Cubs, you got like, it's never 100%. It's like 70-30. And in Milwaukee, it could be 50-50. So you gotta have the right shirts on. And it was just funny, you know, and I'm sure it's a work in progress. But
well, the Nats, I watched parts of all three Nats games, and the Nats had no CGI bodies at all, but they were able to pipe in some artificial noise.
Well, they have
you
that
know,
all.
And that helps.
They have that. Yeah, it helps.
That helps.
Let me tell you something.
Helps.
I know you didn't watch. Let me just tell you this, because I know you didn't watch. The NBA games look fantastic.
What do they do?
They look great. They have, because it's the way, they understood, Tony, like you said, it's a TV show.
Yeah.
They don't have just seats. You can't see empty seats. Because what the NBA's done on the scorer's table side, they have a huge glass there, and the people at the scorer's table are sort of behind the glass. But then behind them, they have electronic stuff. They have the logos of teams, the league. I mean, so the all four sides of the court, you're pinned in. You're playing in an NBA playpen, not an arena. So on television, you're seeing it just looks great. It looks like a video game. And so I even called a couple of people in the NBA to say, my God, I don't know what I was expecting. And I heard they're going to do some things with the court. Like at the beginning, Tony, they talked about having importing a team's floor. And you'd use the floor.
Yeah,
the
I thought they'd do
floor
that.
For home court advantage, but they're not doing that, but they're using. So that's not what you're going to see the team's court. So they can superimpose on the game on television.
Oh.
You're going to see the parquet in the new Boston Garden. They're not playing on it, but you think they are at home.
Well, basketball, unlike baseball, basketball is a much tighter shot. You can control the environment differently.
Well, they do. They control the environment, and it's like, wow. And I watched more basketball than I did baseball this weekend, but it was a wow for sure.
It was pretty hot this weekend. Did you play golf? I thought you were supposed to play.
I got rained out Friday morning, and so, no, Saturday I had to work. Saturday, what I do is back. The NBA, in terms of television, is back. So we had a live.
Because I ended up playing with Mark Tuohy, who said he was supposed to play with you.
I don't know where that came from. Somebody said they have Michael and Matthew Wilbon on with Mark Tuohy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, because Matthew Wilbon is in Kornheiser land. He's in Delaware. He's at the beach. He's not playing anything. And I had to work. I was working Saturday. Saturday was a work day for me.
Okay.
And then yesterday was, I'm not playing at 100 degrees, so the next few days I won't be playing either.
So it felt, I will say this, it does not feel normal. It is not quite normal. But to have a weekend where I went from baseball to golf, approximated, I was so grateful for it, and it approximated normal for me in a way that the last 3 or 4 months didn't come close. How about for you?
I can't say it approximated normal, but I hear you. I posted something on social media. I was so excited Friday night. I went downstairs and I went to the man cave and had all three televisions on.
Yeah.
All three, which and I had legit stuff on. I had the Cubs, and I said I was watching Kyle Hendricks three hit the Brewers on the big, the 70-inch screen. And then on the others, I had Toronto was in a scrimmage, and I think the Raptors can win the East, and I really wanted to watch Toronto early on. And I watched the Raptors and whoever they beat narrowly, Houston, actually, Harden and Westbrook. And then on the third TV, I had the Red Sox and whoever they were playing. And I really was looking for some NHL activity and didn't really find it. But I had all three TVs on, and I was like, wow, this is the first time I've done this since the end of February.
That's a long time.
And it was great to have. And then last night I watched a lot. Because I'd watch the Cubs in the afternoon, watch golf, and I watched a lot of basketball.
Can you please explain Sweet Lou Williams and how any human being could possibly go to a strip club and try to tell people he went there to pick up food and now we'll have to quarantine for at least 10, maybe 14 days? That is the behavior of a dope. It is. It's the behavior, of a dope.
But this is the behavior we anticipated. Why do you think there was so much talk about this for 2 months? This is what we anticipated. When people talked about guys leaving the bubble, why did you think they were leaving the bubble? Go to the grocery store?
Go to a strip club?
Yes.
Well, but I mean, you have...
That's what a lot of young guys with money do anytime.
What team does he play for?
During a pandemic, when they haven't, in many cases, even in Georgia, I'm not sure when, gentlemen's clubs opened up in Georgia. They might have been open for the last month or so. I don't know. But this is what people just nodded, Tony. This is what the hullabaloo was about.
What club does he play for? He plays for the Clippers, doesn't he?
The Clippers. He's the sixth man of the year in the NBA.
So let me just say this. There is nobody in the league. There are some people you respect as much as Doc Rivers, but there's nobody you respect more than Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers is a fine man and a smart man. Doc Rivers must have said to every member of this team, don't be stupid. And then he was stupid, right?
Of course. Tony, again, you act shocked. Why are you shocked at this? Stephen A. talked about this in a depth. We didn't. We talked about people getting out of the bubble. We talked about it, you and I. Stephen A. talked about it, and this is exactly what he said. Oh. What are you talking about? Guys are going to get out. They're going to go looking for some. What are you talking? Why are you surprised at this?
I think it really hurts your team. It hurts your team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leaving the bubble could hurt your team. That's why the one thing that was said, the one thing that was said repeatedly was, our guy's going to stay, every single guy's going to stay in the bubble. So this is exactly what was anticipated. Now, the question is, how many guys will do this? Sweet Lou ain't the only guy who's going to try this.
And you get your picture taken by a rapper. Well, like, it's obvious. It's all right, let me move on.
It was so comical.
Ugh.
It was so comical. And now, you know, luckily for the Clippers and the NBA period, they saw it posted. And they can say, Sweet Lou, stop at that door. Stop there, right there, big boy.
Yeah.
You're not going back in.
Yeah. All right.
So this is not the only time this is going to happen, Tony. The question is, you know, how much can you control? How many times does it happen? And can you stay in front of it as a league and as a team? And that's what the mission is. And that's what they've been able to do so far, stay in front of it.
I wanted to just give a few minutes to the fact that Regis Philbin passed away over the weekend. And he was a huge fan of our show. He will be the Melancholy Trails today. I've written that already. A huge fan of the show, was a guest on the show once. Your thoughts on Regis Philbin and an extraordinary career of great length. Great length.
Yeah, I would recommend anybody who really wants to dive in, read the New York Times obit, which I did late last night, about Regis. And, you know, look, I grew up my whole life watching television. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. Television was my life in a way that nobody even watches TV anymore, and Regis Philbin was always there.
Mm.
Going back to being, you know, on the sofa with Joey Bishop.
Yes.
When I guess it was ABC that was trying to, you know, get some of the ratings that Johnny Carson enjoyed on late night television, Regis Philbin was there. He was on daytime TV. At one point, before he was partnered with Kathy Lee, he was with Cindy Garvey.
Yep.
And they did like a Good Morning LA situation on morning television. And then Regis was always there. It was great. And I'd been a couple of times at Notre Dame games when Regis was there. That's when I first met Regis, when I was a pretty young guy covering college football for the Washington Post. And I was at a Michigan-Notre Dame game, and Regis was there. And I was like, whoa, this Regis Philbin. I mean, it was just, you know, he was on television more than any human being.
They ever
worked out the hours.
Yeah, ever.
It was like, you know, 18,000 hours is great, you know, and I don't even know who works this out or how you can prove this. But Regis, man, it was cool. And yes, Tony, I mean, the people, the iconic television figures who were encouraging and it free with advice and encouragement for us at the very beginning, in a couple of cases before the beginning of PTI, I think I texted you and I said the lions of the business were Larry King, Regis Philbin, Bryant Gumbel, and I'm forgetting somebody else who I had
Maury.
To text.
Maury.
And, of course, Maury was first.
Yeah,
Maury was
first.
Before anybody. So in chronological order, it was Maury and Bryant Gumbel and Larry King and Regis Philbin. And,
yes,
and,
yes.
You know, and I know we had, I mean, we were in Regis's company multiple times, and he would start talking about things we should consider, like in the first few months of PTI, and we were silent. It was like, you know, I'm sure like a young ball player having an audience with like Hubie Brown or something. You shut up and you listen. And I know how grateful I am for that, and I know how grateful you are. But
absolutely,
you know, you have those guys in Regis, but he was just so funny and full of energy, and being a Notre Dame guy, and you know, growing up down the street as I did from Notre Dame, and he would give me you know what about Northwestern and Notre Dame's dominance of us and back and forth. It was just, he was so pleasant and so entertaining, and it was just electric to be the few times I was in his company. And it's, you know, 88 years old.
Yeah, months shy of 89.
That was sneaky old to me. I thought when I started reading the obit, I thought it was going to be 82, 83. Maybe you even said to me, nope, not 82, nope. 83, 88.
All righty. I will see you later in a matter of speaking. Thanks.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. We'll come back with jingles and emails and stuff like that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
Hey, wow.
Tony! Come on, come on. Hey, Tony! Read that mail now, baby.
That's fantastic. That was sent to us by Davey Hazard, the guitarist for Hot Pink Hangover, which sounded like Hot Punk Hangover at that point. They're late to the party, but we recorded a jingle for your mailbag. We continue to love your show. Hope you're staying safe and sane. That is great. Let's play that again at some point. Cannot wait for sports to return. This guy's a Vikings fan, and the NFL and the NBA. Hope they can make it through the season. Fingers crossed. We don't know. What are we doing now? Oh, Nigel, why don't you give an ad for Bethesda Bagels? Yes, if you want me to read the copy first. Go ahead.
Well, I'll say thanks to Bethesda Bagel. We get our bagels there, our bagel sandwiches there. You can as well. They've got several locations in the D.C. area. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com. Also want to say a special thanks again to Michael Wilbon. Not only was on this show, he's on the Adam Ferrara podcast. Give a listen to that as well. Thanks, everyone.
That's just about it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just say that for our last number, I'd like to ask your help. The people in the cheaper seats clap your hands and the rest of you just rattle your jewelry. And that was said by John Lennon at the Albert Hall, I believe, in probably about 1964, 65. Am I right on that, Nigel?
Absolutely. I think it was 1964. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks to the guests today, Michael Wilbon and Tim Kirkchin. Thanks as well to our sponsors, the new HBO show Perry Mason and Fitbot, which Nigel uses. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. I'm going to read a lot of squirrel things here.
How do you say squirrel?
Squirrel.
Squirrel.
Squirrel. From squirrel. Malcolm Wilson in Kensington, Maryland. Cayenne pepper powder. Cheap store brand. Sprinkle around the base and on the plants after watering. Won't hurt them, but it's fun to watch. Use this in bird seed as well. Michael and I we did this.
We did.
We did it already. We're going to do it again. From Jared Emick in Astoria, New York. Great news. The parents of the woman to whom I'm engaged to be related by marriage live on a farm in Lawrence, Kansas. They have plenty of experience with your exact situation. Squirrels eating homegrown tomatoes. I gladly reached out on your behalf. Here's what they said. Squirrels were chewing on our tomatoes and they had to go. We tried coyote pee and repel rodent spray. Neither worked. We then tried a live trap with peanut butter as bait. Didn't work. Switched to Cheetos with peanut butter. Success. We've caught 12 squirrels and one raccoon. Our tomatoes have stayed safe. What to do with the captured squirrels? Drive them at least 3 to 10 miles away and release them in a wooded area. Sounds like a win-win. Your tomatoes remain unscathed and you make some cash on the side driving an Uber for squirrels.
We do have a lot of Cheetos in this house.
We have Cheetos. Carol went Cheeto crazy. Tom in St. Charles, Illinois. I alone can handle your problem with tomato terrorists. A pellet pistol with a hollow point pellets in the hands of a cold-blooded marksman, that's me, will resolve your problem in one day. Allow me to gain access to your garden early in the morning and your vegetable vigilantes will be no more. Please make any noisy neighbors aware of my visit as the pistol has the look of a serious automatic weapon. I'll even dispose of the rodents when I leave. Your tomatoes will then bloom in peace. You have my email. COVID-19 is giving me tons of time that would otherwise be devoted to conducting management seminars, so free time isn't an issue. Jennifer John in Charlottesville. You already have a squirrel deterrent in your house. Chessie. Squirrels hate dogs. Give her a good brushing, then take her hair and put it around your tomato plants and any other plants you want to protect. I do this in my vegetable garden. You can take a tuft of dog hair and put it on the soil next to the plant and use a toothpick to hold it in place. Wow. I'm the little you met at the Jimmy V Foundation dinner at the Boar's Head. My husband Greg sends you a hearty lechizerie. I remember that very well because that was the night that... who was the most recent governor in Maryland? Terry McDonald, right? And he was there, and he was speaking, and I met her there. Jeff Jasper in Overland Park, Kansas. I awake each day to fresh holes in my lawn. My neighbor uses a humane trap and relocates the voracious beasts. Their numbers will only increase. I wish the coyotes would return. Because of squirrels, we cannot have nice things. From Larry Gerald. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage has been growing tomatoes and other fruits and vegetables in containers on our deck for years because the one year that she tried gardening in the yard, the deer ignored all of her deer away products that we bought. This year, she really wanted to garden on a bigger scale, so I built the structure in the attached pictures. The biggest issue we have had is containing the plants. Because we were used to the size that the plants grew in the containers, we thought 3 feet would be a tall enough structure. We were wrong. The terra firma allows the plants to be all they can be. I would be glad to help you, Michael, if you want to undertake this as a weekend project. If not, perhaps you can call on the guys from Pineapple Landscaping. In either case, could I be the official gardening architect for the show? Thanks for many years of laughter and a few tears. The show's outrageously entertaining. From Kevin in Phoenix, I think Michael should install some netting. What's the worst that could happen? Maybe Tony could then take Michael's son with him to the garden and spend some relaxing time together on a hot day. Tony could cut up a tomato and put it in his mouth to scare Michael's son and then chase him around like a monster. Again, what's the worst that can happen?
Bootsy loves tomatoes.
Did you see The Godfather, everybody? Did you see The Godfather? From John Reese, a PhD in microbiology but not horticulture from Annapolis. I've listened to your ramblings for years. Love the creativity about the squirrels. Try a motion-activated sprinkler. It has saved many a tomato. And one more, okay, from Peter in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Sorry this one is a little long, but your story about the squirrels and your tomatoes reminds me of a very similar problem my dad had with his prized fig tree. My father, a Greek immigrant, loves figs. One summer, we were visiting his sister back in Greece, and he brought back a branch from her fig tree to plant in our yard in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. A few years passed, and the tree was starting to produce fruit. His favorite pastime was sitting on the deck and eating figs right off the tree. That is, until the squirrels discovered them. They would pick off the figs just because they were before they were ready to eat. This is what happens. And taunt him by leaving half-eaten figs on the deck. This drove him crazy, so crazy that when we were in the car, if he saw a squirrel in the road, he would swerve toward the squirrel and hit the gas, hoping to thin the local squirrel population and save a couple of figs. A few years later, they got a new dog who loved chasing anything that moved, and the squirrels were no longer an issue. The dog caught a couple of them, and the rest of them got the message. As you were telling the story, I could picture my old man screaming at the squirrels every time he saw one around his fig tree. Alas, when you mentioned you were holding a bag and would reveal the contents of the bag momentarily, part of me thought Chessie was helping out with a problem. There was a dead squirrel in the bag. It brought a smile to my face. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time. God.
Thank you, Regis.
I just need to clear my mind for a few.